are at the intersection of practical DIY home advice and breaking down barriers this Pride Month. Trans Handy Mam, with nearly 2 million followers on TikTok, is on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. According to Bankrate, nationwide homeownership is around 65%. But LGBTQIA homeowner rates are much lower at 49%. Join in on home maintenance, renter DIY efforts for fair, safe housing. 800-642-1234. Mercury Stardust is a maintenance technician, burlesque performer, and activist in Wisconsin. Mercury, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. So you uploaded your first TikTok video, I think, in March of last year. It wasn't about home maintenance or home repairs. It was about burlesque dancers. What led you to the platform to express yourself?
Well, I was working in property maintenance, and it wasn't always fun. So on my breaks, I would just get lost on TikTok with some of my friends who were burlesque dancers as well. And I just slowly got more involved with it. And one day I released a video to help a young woman to learn how to use a ratchet strap for her canoe in her apartment for some reason. And I was just very kind about it. And I just wanted to help her. And all of a sudden that took my platform off from like 100 followers to 20,000 overnight.
How do you come up with ideas? I mean, you know, the home maintenance landscape is ginormous. How do you come up with ideas for what topics you want to talk about?
I listen to my audience. You know, I'm so lucky that my audience has such an immediate connection with me because I always see what they're asking me in the comment section. And I try my best to read as many as I can so I know what direction they want me to go into. And I go in whatever direction they need me to. And it's not surprising that many of them really have me focus specifically on apartments and renting.
What's the deal with Drano and clogs?
Well,
or is that a loaded question?
Definitely one of the most popular questions I get. I think the most chemical drain cleaners, Drano being one of them, don't get the job done. I like to think of them as last minute or the last chance chemicals, right? I think our first option should be drain augers or anything that can try to pull out. Even plungers have a better efficiency rate than most chemical drain cleaners. And the reason why is because when the drain cleaner goes down into your pipes, it's not an ideal condition for those chemicals, right? This is a dirty old pipe. It could be a very different kinds of metals or plastics down in there. And what happens is when that chemical hits it, it's weakened by the time it gets to the clog. But it can loosen the clog up and then send that clog farther down your line and cause an even bigger clog. So I try to tell people, instead of pushing it down farther or trying your best to dissolve it, the best chance is using a hand auger to try to pull up as much as you can.
I watched your video on a hand auger, and I watched with one eye closed. I didn't want to see what might come up from the toilet, but you gave a warning that it wasn't going to look bad.
Yeah, I always try to warn people the best I can that, you know, there's not going to be any human, you know, waste here, or there's not going to be any this here. But sometimes I forget to let people know. But again, that's from learning from my audience. I learned early on that if I was going to show a hair clog, I better put a warning in the beginning or someone wasn't going to be happy.
Talking with Mercury Stardust, maintenance technician, Trans Handy Mam on TikTok, huge number of followers. You can join in with your questions about maintenance, home repairs, what you want to ask about with your landlord situation and repairs. 800-642-1234. So why and how, what's the backstory on you working as a maintenance technician?
That's a great question. So I was a professional cabaret performer for 5 years in my early 20s, which is a decade ago. And I needed a job while I was on tour on the weekends from Thursday to Sunday. I needed a job Monday through Thursday morning. So someone was like, hey, you have all this background in being a farmhand and growing up on a farm and working in like theatrical like production companies. We could just throw you into there and have you intern for a while and see what happens. And that's what I did. I just interned as a maintenance technician. And it just started slowly turning into much more of my life. And I fell in love with it. And I guess this is where I am now.
You learned from your dad as well, I understand, growing up.
Yes, I did. I always like to kind of think of it as my dad, the only way we could communicate was through sports and maintenance. And we didn't really have the best communication tactics, right? So if I wanted to have any type of relationship with my dad when I was younger, I better learn how to use a wrench. So I got good at that as a way to be a language, but I didn't even necessarily like doing it. I didn't really have a passion to do it. So in a lot of ways, those skills that I learned during that time period allowed me to be like, you know, the Lady Robin Hood later on and, you know, take all that knowledge that I thieved from my dad and other men in my life and then give it back to a much more queer community that I've developed around me.
Mm. Your TikTok videos, they've really taken off. You are an established creator at this point, really sharing who you are and maintenance advice along the way. How do you feel at this point about business sponsorships?
I have a very, I walk a thin line. I never want my audience ever to believe that I'm saying I like this product because I'm getting paid for it. Or even if I've gotten paid in the past, I don't want them to think that I'm more concerned about the products I'm talking about than them. So I walk a pretty thin line. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to work with businesses. I definitely am. But I try my best to make sure that before I even say a word, before the sponsorship starts, that we have a very clear boundary that's set. I don't necessarily ever want to lead my audience into a direction I don't already believe in. So it's been a thin line. And I don't get sponsored quite often because I'm very picky.
Hmm. When you say you're very picky, what type of sponsorships do you lean into? What do you just run as fast as you can away from?
Well, I try my best to make sure that if there's a company that reaches out to me, I want to make sure they're already LGBTQIA focused. Mm. I don't ever like to be the token in their to help them out. I know that my voice carries very far and it's only going to grow and carry farther down the road. And I don't want to lend my voice to a company or a business that doesn't really have a clear understanding of how to support my community. I can certainly help them move forward with that and help them set a good foundation. But when we get to the public eye, if they see me stand with this company, I want them to already know that this is a company that really does put in the work and cares a lot about the community and just doesn't want our money, but actually wants to help us.
Trans Handyman of TikTok, Maintenance Tech, Mercury Stardust stays with us on inclusivity, housing, DIY. Join in with questions. What issues you're trying to work on around your space? Advice on getting your landlord to fix an issue. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Mercury Stardust here on The Ideas Now. It is Inclusive Home Maintenance in this Pride Month on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Mercury Stardust, who's a property manager in Wisconsin. Nearly 2 million TikTok followers. These videos, they really just cut to the chase on DIY home issues, like how to properly use a toilet auger, as we've been talking about. Handy tools to have, good visuals. Join in with your questions about DIY fixes, tools in your toolbox that save time and money. 800-642-1234. Mercury Stardust is with us for the hour. So you say your videos really focus on helping out people who rent their homes rather than own them. What are the maintenance differences between renters and homeowners?
I love that question because it's what I'm asked all the time. And I like to frame it this way, where a lot of problems that we have in our homes that we own, we have in our rentals, right? But it doesn't flip all the way around. Very rarely do you hear a renter talk about the gutters, right? So a lot of the fundamental ideas, a lot of the fundamental problems we have in every home, regardless if we own or rent, is found in a renter, right? Found in a tenant themselves. From plumbing, from having bad electrical wiring sometimes, from having damages on our wall, from having carpet being pulled up, and then various things like that. A lot of door problems, so many door issues. So if all those things are what we find in our renters, then that we also find that in our homeowners as well. And now if you add in the homeowners, there's a lot of extra stuff when it comes to foundation. Maybe there comes more lawn care and et cetera like that. But the foundation of what every person experiences as like having a home of any kind can be found in a renter's property.
Laws in Wisconsin say landlords must keep in a reasonable state of repair certain services, like you mentioned, like plumbing and heating and air conditioning. What to you is a reasonable state of repair?
That is such a good question. And there's always a crazy gray line.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, if a reasonable repair is anything that I can do right there by myself in that moment, right? And that could be a huge, wide variety. In the state of Wisconsin, maintenance technicians are not required to have a license or any certifications. And that's where the problem comes in. A reasonable repair for me, as someone who has 14 certifications, has been doing this for over 14 years, is a lot wider, right? I can fix HVAC. I can do things for your furnace. I can do things for any type of leak that you might have in your home, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of maintenance technicians who won't have that ability. So their reasonable frame of repair is going to be a lot smaller. And those are things we need to be able to talk about in this state, is why we don't have some type of licenses that require education in this field.
Let's take a call now. Jennifer is joining us from Madison. Jennifer, hi. You're rehabbing a 100-year-old home?
Yeah, so we bought a small farm outside of Madison and have been rehabbing the farmhouse. And we're trying to redo some flooring, but unfortunately, I think we got in a bit over our heads. As we pulled back the carpet, we found about 6 layers of different flooring from everyone else who's ever owned this house. So I was wondering if Mercury Stardust had any recommendations for either flooring companies or maintenance people who could help us level out the floor that are LGBTQIA+ friendly, because I think it's very important to support everyone.
And I'm also wondering if Jennifer needs to pull up all of those layers of flooring that have happened before. Mercury, go ahead.
Well, thank you for asking this really good question. It's one of the most common ones I get. People see me on TikTok and they go, okay, there has to be more, right? There has to be more of her. And the answer is this, is when we're looking for companies, we're looking for organizations to do this work for us, how do we make sure that they're LGBTQIA focused?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first thing we need to go do is look on their website, right? And ask for references. See if there's any references whatsoever. Sometimes there's references from businesses that are already within the LGBTQIA world, right? And sometimes there's not. But that could be a good indication of what their focus is. Other times, there might even be a mention of being like certified by any type of LGBTQIA organization or chamber of commerce, right? Sometimes that's there. Now, thing is, most of the time, you won't see that because in this world, in this industry, we're not a focus. And LGBTQIA community is just not the focus of these companies. So then you got to have that conversation. And call and ask specifically if they cater or they do a lot of work within the LGBTQIA community. And sometimes that's not a fun conversation, but then you become a resource for your entire community. When people ask you, you know, right? And it's a lot of trial and error. our community is really good at letting each other know when we have a bad experience. So don't be afraid of asking your other local people in your community who may know. But quite frankly, there just isn't a list of all the people who are friendly or kind towards us as there should be. But maybe one day there will be.
Hmm. And as for the flooring in this old farmhouse, what tips and advice do you have?
This is something that is going to require having a specific eye on it, right? Because it can go bad pretty quickly. When you have that many different flooring, the first thing I'm going to ask is why, right? How long has this been going on? When did they start doing this? Like, when did they start adding different floors, different type of flooring to it? And then I'm probably going to want to get a professional in there to at least ask them. I always tell people getting three professionals in is going to be a big difference. The first person who comes in, you pick their brain and you get as much information from them as possible. And then you use that information for the next two people that you're going to have come in and give you quotes, because now you're going to really know who's giving you the best quote because you're using all the information you got from the first one. And then you'll be able to make a better, more educated decision throughout that process the more you learn.
A lot of detective work going on, it sounds like.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is a part of owning a home and doing all this. All our homes have what I like to call generational trauma on it.
Hmm.
You know, you're not just dealing with the decisions that you've made. You're dealing with the decisions that the previous owner has made, that the previous contractors made, that the previous people who built the home. And then even before that, you're dealing with a foundation. So who knows about that, right? So it's generational trauma over the years that can be in this building. So it can take a little bit of time to figure out what the right move is for you. And it might not be, a paint-by-numbers decision.
One of my concerns, too, is having a 1960s home is, you know, when you want to put that new flooring in, does the flooring under there have asbestos in it? And, you know, can we just cover it and not disturb it, or do we have to get that pulled up? And that has become an issue for us, at least.
Yeah, that's actually really common in the state of Wisconsin in general. Mm-hmm. With a lot of things, when it comes with like a popcorn ceiling, flooring, like you said, sometimes even in the walls of your home, right? They do make asbestos testing kits that you can buy at almost any hardware store at this point. You can also hire a professional to do that as well. But the fact of the matter is when we're doing any type of restoration or any type of renovation in our home, I cannot stress enough the importance of wearing proper PPE and making sure that your eyes, your nose, your ears and your hands are all covered properly, and try to wear long sleeves, because you never know in the moment what you're going to run into. And it's really important, especially in homes that predate the 70s, to really make sure that we're careful and smart about how we go about it.
Talking with Mercury Stardust, maintenance technician, trans handyman on TikTok, as we look at home maintenance and the LGBTQIA community. Join in 800-642-1234. Going back to landlords and upkeep and maintenance, what are the tenants responsible to fix? When you look at the issues that you've seen, you know, what kind of lands in the tenant category?
It's such a good question, because it could be a lot, it could be very little. Some leases are going to dictate what the tenant is responsible for and not responsible for. Some property management companies will even put in there that we have to change light bulbs and not the tenant, right? But others will say that you're responsible for the light bulb, you're responsible for drains, you're responsible for, you know, the carpet, all those kind of stuff. So it really depends what the lease says. Now, what I'm going to say is, someone who's been doing this for a long time, I want my tenants to be as informed as possible. I want them to be able to fix things that are going to make my life a little easier, because, hey, when I was working in property maintenance, I would have over 380-some tenants that I would have to care for, right? Mm-hmm. That's about 140 different properties that I was, or units I was looking in. How can I do all those, right? So we're kind of trying our best as a community to make sure that we are helping each other out, right? So if you know how to take care of your garbage disposal because I showed you how, then that's going to save me a little time before I have to show up. And when I show up this time, I know I'm going to need to replace it because you already tried to repair it. Those kind of things. But I think of like a drain clog. I think it's very straightforward. I think toilet clogs can also be straightforward. I think, honestly, in my opinion, I think that holes in your wall can also be something that you can repair. I want to be able to drop off a bucket of paint and trust that you can do that. And some landlords and some maintenance technicians hate that I say that, but we have to empower people, give people the ability to take care of their home. Yes, things might go south, but heck, things might go south if I do it too. All because I'm a professional does not mean I don't make mistakes.
Mercury Stardust, maintenance technician, trans activist, stays with us on spreading inclusive and compassionate education and home repair. Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. News update is next. Spreading DIY home repair knowledge and compassion, Mercury Stardust of Wisconsin is on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Her videos on TikTok help empower people to tackle small repairs by themselves. Join in on toilet tank issues, light switches not working, low water pressure, patching holes to perfection, so many more things. 800-642-1234. Mercury Stardust, maintenance tech for more than a dozen years, with us for the hour. So I'm thinking that the first line of your memoir is, it all started with a ratchet strap. I'm wondering if you could tell us about when we should use a ratchet strap or these tie-down straps. How do you use them?
Well, thank you for asking that, because everyone should have like some bungee cables in their back of their car or have a ratchet strap. Ratchet straps to me are really good if you're having a much heavier load. If you have a hatchback or if you have a truck and you're trying to put in like a big bookshelf or something in the back of your car that you bought from an antique store or something, right? Mm-hmm. Having a ratchet strap is really good because it's going to give you the most tight protection, right? Like it's going to really cinch you in. Think of a ratchet strap as a corset, right? Like it's going to cinch that waist in real tight. A bungee cable is more like a shaper, right? Like it definitely pushes back a little more. And that shaper is great for some things, but sometimes you need that corset. and that's kind of how I like to think about it. So a bungee cable is great for maybe a trunk. Like if your trunk's not closing, I think it's great for those applications. And it's a little bit quicker. But your ratchet strap is going to give you a stronger hold overall.
Do you have to pay attention, though, to load limits on the strap? I mean, it can't hold everything. Yeah.
Yeah, and the same thing goes with bungee cables, though. So the different colors on the bungee cable will be different weight loads. Like sometimes it'll be like, you know, maximum of like 40 pounds, or sometimes it's 100 pounds. It all depends on what it says on the box when you get it, right? But sometimes 10 years down the road, after you've had a bungee cable, you might forget what colors mean what. Mm-hmm. So I always tell people that put a tag on your bungee cable that says how much weight it can actually hold. And the same thing should go with your ratchet strap, because over time you forget. And don't always think about it as like a vertical weight limit. Like if you're holding a bungee cable upwards towards the sky and the bottom end is pointing down to the ground, if it's holding a pail that's like 40 pounds, right? Mm-hmm. That's how it's designed to, right? It's designed to be stretched out like that. But if you're pushing it in a different direction, if you're holding both ends and you're pushing it away, that's how you're going to be using it, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to keep in mind how the physics are pushing up against your ratchet straps as well and your bungee cables. That if it's going in an unnatural direction, it might actually be straining it and it's going to not be that weight limit that it holds.
What are some of the essential things that people should have in every toolbox?
I love this question because I always like taking an outside of the box point of view on this. So people are going to tell you that you need to have the right tool for the right job. And I'm going to say that's bollocks. You need to have the right tool that you have at hand, right? So I think you need to focus on four central tools in every toolbox and build off of that. It's kind of like we're building a foundation of a home, right? In order to have a good foundation of a home, we need to have a good variety of tools that can do a whole bunch of different things when we're on a budget, right? Especially for renters. And the first thing we should have is a multi-screwdriver, preferably one that has 10 in one. That means you're going to have a flathead in there. You're going to have a Phillips, maybe a 1 and 2 Phillips. So that means you're going to have a really tiny Phillips screwdriver in there and a larger, more regular size Phillips as well. Maybe a square bit and maybe even some nut drivers inside of that 10 in one multi-screwdriver. The second thing you're going to want is having some type of channel locks. That's also called an adjustable pliers. A channel locks or adjustable pliers, it can be used for so many different things. It can be used for plumbing. It can be used to hold things down when you're working on something. It can be even used for demolition. I think a really good adjustable pliers can basically do almost anything. Now, the next one is going to be your Allen key set or your Allen wrenches. Mm-hmm. I like to have a standard or a metric because we live in America, which means that there's a lot of different options. We get a lot of European products in our home, and we might need to have a metrics once in a while when we are dealing with this stuff as well. And then the last thing would be a utility knife. If you have those four tools, you can do a lot more, especially when we're talking about renters. Almost everything in your home, 60, 70% of what you're doing in the home can be solved with those problems, right? Then the next tier up would be your power drills and your hammers and et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that first tier is going to give you a nice wide variety that when you're on a small budget and you can't afford a $100 drill, well, you can get a $10 multi-screwdriver and you can, you know, use some arm grease to screw in things when you need to.
I'm thinking that utility knife coming in handy, trying to patch a little hole on a wall. I'm wondering if you have any tips and advice on doing patches on walls.
I always tell people the thing that I want them to think about is all these products that say that they can make this go fast, is fast drying this, fast drying that, just throw it out the window. Right? Because you can get joint compound for the same price, if not lower sometimes. And joint compound is essentially the stuff we use when we first make the wall, right? Joint compound is essentially just mud, and we mix in a little bit of water with it. And that becomes this really great pancake batter style mixture that we can now apply with any type of putty knife that we got, right? And don't be afraid to take your time with it. If you are on a short time lease and you can't get it done, right, and you need it to be a little bit faster, then you can use something called hot mud. And hot mud is just a fancy way of saying like 10 or 20 minute mud. And you mix that with water as well. And you put that on there and it sets within that 10, 20 minute mark. It doesn't completely dry. But if you have kids around or puppers who like to go play, that prevents it from, you know, putting their paw prints or their little baby hands all over that wall.
I see where this is going.
Yeah. And I think you can just apply it and don't be afraid of taking several doing it several times. Everyone likes to get it right the first time. And it just isn't the case with mud. I mean, it's like an art form in a lot of ways. Knowing how to place your hand on a wall, especially when we're talking larger repairs. If we're talking pin needles, oh, that's much easier to handle, right? We can get away with using spackle, and there's very small ones. But we're talking big ones that are like maybe like an inch, 2, 4, 10, 20 inches bigger, right?
Okay.
Then we need to talk about using joint compound. Preferably, I like joint compound. Bomb for everything, but there's within reason.
I was surprised that you didn't mention spackle. Because I just reached for the spackle, but you're saying on those bigger wall patches, you need the heavy duty stuff.
Yeah, I would say, honestly, joint compound, I wouldn't even call it heavy duty. Joint compound is just the standard of the industry, right? Okay. Whenever I've had to fix anything, I never go to spackle. And the reason why is because spackle is just a, you know, they put a lot of money into those products and they really make them seem like they're great. Sometimes you actually generally spend more than you would in a joint compound, and you can get a small little bucket for joint compound for $3. You know, I don't know how we got to this point where we think the spackle is the better option.
But it's pink and then it turns white.
Yes. Yeah. And but also joint compound, it's very gray when you put it on and it dries so different from the rest of the wall that I also think it does the same thing that those pink spackles do.
Okay.
I sometimes think that we overcomplicate things in this industry so we can turn a better profit. And we make people believe that this stuff is impossible for people to do. And we make people feel like they're inferior if they don't do it this one way. But reality is it's much more simple and straightforward if we just talk to people that way.
Hmm. Mercury Stardust with us, maintenance technician, trans handyman, TikTok creator. Join in on home maintenance, home repairs, 800-642-1234. You mentioned at the outset there are so many issues with doors. What are some of those common things that people have to fix with their doors?
Thank you for asking this one, because I just fixed this one for my partner, Chess, last week. There was a door in their apartment where their door was like catching the top of the frame. And then all we basically had to do is take a planner. And a planner is, not what you organize as your week, but it has a sharp blade in it. This block planner can actually shave off the top of your door a little bit at a time. And if you can find the right adjustment, you can just shave off like a 16th of an inch or an 1/8 of an inch. And sometimes that does just enough, right? Mm-hmm. Another thing that we'll have is the strike plate won't properly be aligned for your latch on your door. So if you look in the frame of your door and you see where the hole is where your latch goes into on the door frame, sometimes that's not in the right spot. Or over the years, the door, the building moves, mm-hmm. and the frame will kind of tilt in a weird direction or get a little bit kinked up. And then that raises the door up a little bit and then raises the frame down a little bit. And then the hole doesn't line up. That can be fixed pretty easy by just making a new hole and carving it out with your utility knife that we mentioned before and raising the strike plate up or down. Another thing you might want to look into is the hinges on your door, making sure those are actually checked on a regular basis. Make sure that they are doing okay once a year or so. If you're having problems that the door is not lining up in your frame well, then often what happens is that the hinges are getting loose, mm-hmm. or they were overly tightened to begin with, and that's what's making the door cattywampus.
We had an issue with weather stripping, and I just like, you know, pull the stuff off. It's not working. I mean, you want to seal up that door, but meanwhile, like, then the door wouldn't shut properly or lock properly. So, you know, I know I've had issues with weather stripping. What would you suggest there?
Oh, boy. So I always think of, for people when they use weather stripping, it all depends on what type of door we're talking about, too, mm-hmm. and what the problem actually is. I think weather stripping has become like this, let's use this first before we check everything else thing. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it is just like getting something like a door sweep for the bottom of your door. And that can actually make the rest of your door a little bit tighter in all the other edges, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's adding cushion to the bottom and that can realign your door too. And those door sweeps too, you can get the ones that you can just quickly install for like $10. You can get the door sweeps that are like $30 or $40 that can really add extra protection in the bottom. But if you're having problems on the side too, they also make those fast installed door sweeps on the side as well. And I think that we just quickly go towards solutions like weather stripping because that's it's just kind of the easiest option sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But often the easiest, fastest option is not the one that's going to last long term. That stripping is going to get torn up. It's going to age poorly, and you're going to be redoing that every couple of years. And the more you redo it, the more you strip it off, the worse that door frame comes. And then you're getting to the point where the door frame might need to be replaced if it's getting too damaged.
Mm. Mercury Stardust of Wisconsin followers flocked to the trans handyman on TikTok. Got the how-to videos going, tackling questions on basic home repairs, advice for renters along the way. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Mercury here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Mercury Stardust, walking us through the answers on home DIY repairs, doing it from an inclusive and compassionate perspective. With us for about 9 more minutes, let's go to Tony in Manitowoc. Tony, hi.
Hi there. Hi, Mercury.
Hi.
I love you on TikTok. Learned a lot of stuff. I have a question about my toilet. The toilet kicks in and runs water from the tank to the bowl, and I've adjusted that little screw on the top of the float, and I can't get that to stop. Do you have any suggestions?
It sounds like you might not need to replace your float at this time. If you've done all the work inside your toilet itself, like if you've adjusted that float and you messed with it as much as you could, and you're still not having... If still not fixing the problem, the chances are that float and the entire incoming line needs to be replaced, right? Like everything inside of there. Now, the good news is all that's fairly cheap, right? We're talking like maybe $10, $15, and that's not too bad, right? Just make sure that when you're buying the new fill valve, that we're actually getting the right kind, right? Because they're brand specific sometimes. And the universal ones are great, but they don't always work. So make sure that when you take it out, I would make sure that you take photos of it and you get the right kind for what you need, okay?
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Tony, thank you for that call. Mary now in Pewaukee. Mary, what's going on?
Yes, good morning. Well, I just liked you on Facebook. Thank you. Great show and what a big personality. Actually, two things I wanted to add. Please let people know what not to put in a toilet to plug it up. And when I worked at a place where there was a handyman at this older age residence, the handyman said they would find these white mice. Those are Tampax. Those are not supposed to go in a toilet, and I never knew that at that time. Anyway, pass the word on what not to put down there, including, you know, Kleenex, et cetera. So my real question, though, regarding our own home, is I just power washed the patio, and I see all these hairline cracks. What is the best way to take care of that, please? And good luck, and thank you. You're very, very helpful.
Mary, quick question. Hairline cracks, what type of surface is the patio? Oh, dear. And I think Mary just dropped. What can you make of Mercury?
I love that you asked the same question I was going to before she took off. Okay, well, first and foremost, let's talk about the toilets because I'm on a toilet run right now. And let's make sure that when it comes to what we have in toilets and what we need to flush down it, it's really only, natural waste and natural things like that, right? And then tissue paper, because those things are designed to break up and be torn apart. Flushable wipes are not flushable, right? Tampons and et cetera, those things should not be thrown down there. The toilet is not a magical go-away hole, okay? And it's important to acknowledge that because we're having a real crisis right now in our country when it comes to having bad sewage lines. And largely is because we treat our plumbing like it's a magical go-away hole and we put a lot down there we shouldn't put down there. And it might get through our lines at our home, and it might get through our wet vents at our home. But when it gets to the sewage line, that's a lot of things converging in one location. And we're often having huge problems and whole blocks in our in our drain lines across the country in various locations because of our improper usage of the toilet. Now, the hairline fractures on your patio. I'm assuming that it's concrete, and I'm assuming that's what she's talking about. If yes. not, it's going to be a little bit harder to answer this. But they make specific products that can help fill this up. But the thing is, the solution is something you're not going to like. The solution for all those hairline fractures is how it was originally laid. If concrete isn't set properly and the foundation isn't set well, no matter how many times you patch it, no matter how many times you try to fix it, you're always going to have hairline fractures coming in. Mm. And that's just a sad truth of it. So making sure that when you are having a contractor do that for you, I always say if you're dealing with contractors, you got to make sure you get a professional who's done it for a long time and understands the soil in which they're working with on your property, right?
Okay.
If you're somewhere in Middleton here in Dane County, right, you're going to have a lot more issues with wetland, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to make sure that you're dealing with a much more soft soil. That's going to be a different foundation, right? Sometimes you got to go deeper when you're setting up the concrete because you're going to have problems with that, right? And sometimes when you're in a much more hard soil, it's going to be so hard to get through there that you're not going to be able to set the concrete properly, and you're going to have more hairline fractures as well. So it kind of goes past what you can do as a homeowner when it's already set, and it's more about when you're first doing it. Now, mm-hmm. if you're having problems right now, you can fix that with, you know, various products that can help set it, but that might be just patching a tiny little hole and having it coming over and over again, you know?
Well, let's go to Athea now, who is a truck driver driving through Wisconsin. Athea, go ahead.
Hi, yes. Earlier you were talking about spackle for your walls, and I, with my things coming off of the walls, like I have an old house, and my towel bar keeps, you know, pulling out. My drapery bar always falls down eventually. And if I patch it with spackle, I know I'm not going to have to, like, move where I replace the bar. And how can I stop it from continually falling out with these older walls?
Athea, thank you for that. Go ahead, and we're short on time here.
That's such a good question. The answer to this is that there's two different routes we can go with. A, I think the way that you're putting the towel bar into your bathroom might need to be adjusted. I would look into a toggle bolt wall anchor. Those have a wide back and can have a much more strength when it comes to being behind the wall. And no matter how big your hole is for the towel rack, typically those can do the job. Now, another thing I would do is it might be a bigger repair than just the towel bar itself. You might want to open it up and put what we call a backer behind the wall. A backer is a 2x4 that goes between one stud and goes to another stud. And then you can seal it up with a good drywall patch. Mm. Even if you're having, even if you have plaster and lathes, you can use joint compound and you can use things and kind of use drywall to patch it up as you go along, okay?
All right, Athea, thank you for that call. Mercury, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Mercury Stardust, maintenance technician known as the Trans Handyman on TikTok. We have a link to her website at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.